We're back. Lloyd, welcome back to 102.9 FM, whistlefm.com here in Stouffville. And I promise we'll find you back to Union Station somehow later today. So.
Great, yeah.
Hey, Lloyd, great to have you here. And we mentioned in the break that we might bring up the topic of how we may have harmed others, or how our behavior may have harmed others in our life, and how we sort of take responsibility for that. Can you give us a bit about your own life in that area, and how you might have harmed anybody and what you did about it?
Yes. Yeah, you know, when I was using, I was like a function addict, where I didn't lose my job, or I didn't lose my house, and, I made sure that, I was functioning, but, I didn't realize that, I was hurting anybody. Mm-hmm. But, sometimes, people talk about rock bottom, and I'm trying to figure out where my rock bottom was, and I couldn't see that I was hurting anybody, but in the long run, now that the smoke is cleared, I could see where I lost.
Yeah.
There was loss that accumulated.
Well, you lost, you also mentioned earlier that you lost a lot of friends, because I mentioned a bit of my story and kind of becoming what I call a fentanyl fighter, because that seems to be the drug that's killing more people than anything else right now. And I mentioned that, and you'd said quite a number of people you'd lost. And I thought, well, maybe you can tell us a little bit about that. And that might have had something to do with, where you were going, or your decision-making processes and so on. I don't know, but,
Yeah, well, I lost about 28 friends last year, while using drugs. And, I realized that, jails, institutions, and death was the choices that were available. And, I really didn't like those choices.
Yeah.
So I figured that I had to do something. And, I moved out of the town, the only town I've lived in and I've known in Canada. And I've, moved into another town. And, it's one of the best moves I've ever made.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to break all those relationships off? It's pretty difficult. I mean, you obviously had a whole life that you lived for 40 years or whatever, in an area of the GTA, and then, and you up and left, which, by the way, great move, because, if you get 28 guys dropping around you, or, guys and gals, and then, trying to stay in there and get well yourself, that's, you got a lot against you. So, that to me was a very wise geographical move. It wasn't, you didn't move as though, that were the whole cure, because we learn in these programs that the geographical cure is wonderful, but the biggest problem with it is that, I might live in a different place, but I'm still there, and I'm the problem. But when you cut off things like that, what was that like? Like, did you, you had your girlfriend? I don't know, was that the same girlfriend you had in when you lived in the other area, or?
Well, when it came to the decision making part, I actually told her, let's go get clean, and she decided that this is not what she wanted. So I figured I had to save myself, because I couldn't save both of us.
Yeah, good for you.
So I got up and I abruptly left, and I was seeking a new way to live.
Mm-hmm.
I was seeking for new people, new friends, mm-hmm. and I eventually weaned out all the old friends out of my contact list, and started adding people within the program.
Yeah.
And so it's not the drugs that we try and stray away from. We have to, you know, stray away from the influence.
Yeah.
And the influence was my friends.
Yeah.
And it was kind of hard to leave some of them, but
yeah.
You know, there comes a time where we have to really, you know, think about, you know, our own selves.
Yeah, exactly.
Saving ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's that was at the forefront of my thinking.
That's neat. It always reminds me of the analogy used to describe, you know, what we're supposed to do if an airplane is going down. You know, we always think, oh, we got to save the guy beside us, or my child, or my wife,
yes,
or whatever. When in reality, if you don't grab that oxygen mask and put it on yourself, you're not able to save anybody. So, you know, we often say in these programs, well, you know, we put our God first, whatever that represents, and but we're second. You know, like,
yeah,
we've got to be healthy if we're going to be of any value to anything or anybody in this world. And you know, and you did that, and it obviously was the right thing to do. And as I said before, you know, if that many people are dying, I was going to ask you, were a lot of those from fentanyl, as far as you know?
A lot of them was from fentanyl, but the issue arose when fentanyl is starting to be an additive to all the other drugs,
yeah,
like the cocaine and,
yep,
and the heroin and whatnot. So,
mm-hmm,
yeah, that was a big issue with the fentanyl.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah. As I was saying to you, in the jails where we see about 50 people a week now on a good week, the addicts who we see, 9 out of 10 have overdosed on fentanyl,
yes,
at one time or another, and they've all lost friends, you know, like you have, and like I say, I lost my son, and that drug became an enemy number one. I know in the U.S., I remember President Trump, when he heard what this stuff was doing, saying, well, that's it, no more of that stuff here. Anybody caught with that is you know, going away for a long time. And then he, like so much of the rest of the world, heard about this carfentanil, which is not even the same derivative, but it sounds the same. But carfentanil is actually an elephant tranquilizer, and people were, it is so powerful, folks out there, that you can take a pin, you know, and dip it in this powder and jab yourself with it, and you might die. Like that's
yeah,
that's how serious, and that's why the police talk so you know, vehemently about, you know, fentanyl, and they're often referring to carfentanil, which they're cutting, which means, as Lloyd was explaining, adding to other drugs, and this is pure evil, because I mean, they've even you know, cut marijuana in cases with this stuff, you know. So
yes, a friend of mine smoked a marijuana cigarette and died from it, because it was mixed with fentanyl.
Yeah.
And I'm so, saying, like, what scares me is, like, how do you know if there's fentanyl in it? There's no way of knowing that.
And one thing you do know, especially if it's a carfentanil, which is, you know, it's a sure killer if you don't know you're using it, and some of them tell me they know how to use it, but, you know, they do until they die. But the fact remains that it's evil to do that, and I don't even, you know, pushers want to make money. They don't want to kill all the people who buy their drugs, so I can't even see them lacing stuff with that, you know? So,
yeah,
so like, it's beyond the norm here, and, you know, I don't know whether it's some sort of divine a mix to push people away from drugs. We would hope if something came to that, that would be the result, but that's not the case either. It's just all the higher is greater and greater and more, and,
yeah,
you know?
And I remember when I was in the recovery house,
okay,
you know, two people died in the recovery house.
Really?
Yes. So that kind of made me more alert. I mean, this is going on everywhere. Even in the recovery house, there's people dying as well. You know, that was scary for me to see, because one of the fellows, I knew him from another recovery house, and, you know, he died right in front of my eyes. And, you know, that really woke me up.
Wow.
As well.
It's like a sobering moment,
yes,
isn't it?
When, yes, yes.
You know, and folks, if you haven't seen a person alive and then that same person dead, it's not an easy thing to handle, no matter who it is or what it is. And if there's a number of them, and I think that is working so much against the addict, the ones we see in jails, that, you know, but that is not enough to stop a lot of them from using, you know, and that's, you know, this also tells me that, yeah, addiction is certainly a disease, and there are steps we can take to cope with it, but, you know, and that is why an addict or an alcoholic would rather say, I'm a recovering addict or alcoholic in many cases, than would rather say, I've recovered or I used to be. And because that fact remains, you can slip back in, you can relapse in your mind, body, soul. You can relapse by just having an old stinking thinking habit come back, and boom, you know, you're back into that, you know.
And one of the like we were talking before, I created several social media websites.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the group is Living with Anxiety and Depression.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of survival groups, you know, basic survival and skills. And one of the things that we spoke about was, like we're talking, is addiction being an illness and, mm-hmm. and a choice. And, mm-hmm. and a few days ago, that was one of the subject that we had, where I was trying to tell somebody that addiction is, it starts off as a choice,
mm-hmm.
but when the addictive part kicks in, then it removes the choice.
Yeah, right on.
And you know, it's some people are talking, and they're not addicts,
mm-hmm.
and they're talking how it feels, or how it should feel, and I don't think that you can really know how it feels if you're not an addict.
Yeah,
it's not something that you could talk about. You know, well, I know how it feels.
No, exactly. Yeah, you're totally right, and I think that's a big mistake made often. Oh, you must this or you must that, or you should this or should that. Well, if you're not there, if you haven't been there, you don't know. And, you know, so the only thing you can do when you don't know is respect, you know, respect someone's sense of it, someone's feelings, someone's emotions, and know that you don't know, and try and get that person in some sort of forum, some sort of arena, some sort of group where he or she can be understood, because it's identification, we'll call it.
One of the things I say is that only those that feel it can know it. Knows how it feels. Yeah. Only those who feel it can tell you how it feels.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a true experience. You know, that's like maybe like the experience of the spiritual aspect of life. If you don't know it, you can talk till you're blue in the face, and it's not going to mean anything to anybody. You know, and that's you know like when people try and beat someone over the head with their religion or their beliefs or whatever. You know, I mean, some may go that way, but I find that's just not, it's just not right. You've got to demonstrate something with experience in order to make it attractive. And that's the same, I believe, with sobriety too. Like it's, you know, the evidence of your life is really what talks, you know, like everything else we say is basically opinions, and we all have different ones on everything, you know. So tell us a little more about what you're doing with social media there. You mentioned depression, anxiety, and in that discussion as to whether addiction is a disease, basically, or just some bad decision. And I agree with you totally. when that line gets crossed, whenever it is, that imaginary line, then it's no longer a bad choice. It has someone, and I know it. I've seen it. And I've seen many, many, many come out of it. But I also know, percentage-wise, it's pretty small, regardless of what such and such an outfit will say, you know, in terms of percentages and all that. I don't go by that at all. All I know is the 12-step philosophy worldwide has more visitors every day of the year than anything else imaginable, other than maybe religious associations of different types, you know. So anyway, what other types of groups or pages do you have that
I'm focused mainly on the living with anxiety and depression, because I realize that there's there's lots of people suffering from that illness, and even that illness can cause addiction as well.
Yeah,
you know, it's like a mask, you know, to hide the depression and the anxiety. And you know, one time I was on the social media, and somebody raised the point of anxiety, and I realized that there's not a lot of information on people living with anxiety and depression. So I decided to form a social media website and call it Living with Anxiety and Depression, where where we get together worldwide and discuss. It's given people a platform, a voice, whereas it gets them out of the comfort zone, and they could talk about it more. And, I'm learning a lot from it.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
You know, I never realized that there were so many people, and even famous people.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That have this illness, habit forming.
Habit forming that's part of that magical line again, isn't it?
Yeah.
At some place you kind of slip over it and into the abyss, and the next thing we know, we need treatment, we need support, we need people, we need our God. I think we're going to take one more break and then come back and go into another devotional for a very short period, one that is written for every day of the 365, and that day is represented by, number 200 and what did I say it was here? If you got it on the back there somewhere. What's that number there?
218.
218. So day 218 on the Take Your Life Back Day by Day program, also written by David Stoop and Stephen Arterburn. So we'll be back shortly, and I think we're going to hear a tune, are we, Jay?
Yeah, I think it's time for a song. And one of the themes that I've noticed coming out of sharing the burden and going through the whole recovery process is courage. So here's some Canadian content for you, Tragically Hip and Courage, and we'll be back here on Whistle FM, Sharing the Burden.
Follow the unknown with sound. anything important any of us do. And yet a human tragedy consisted the necessity of living with the consequences under pressure.